Chapter 3. Acquired, to acknowledge this even to himself, he hated to think that she could owe anything to such conditions as this he had been placed in, and it gave him a sense of the tremendous strength of the organization into which he had been absorbed, that in spite of her horror, her moral revolt, he had not reacted against its external forms. She might abhor her husband, her marriage, and the world to which it had introduced her, but he had become a product of that world in its outward expression, and no better proof of the fact was needed than her exotic enjoyment of Americanism. The sense of the distance to which her American past had been removed was never more present to him than when, a day or two later, he went with his mother and sisters to return her visit. The region beyond the river existed, for the Durham ladies, only as the unmapped environment of the Bon March, and Nanny Durham's exclamation on the pokiness of the streets, and the dullness of the houses showed Durham, with a start, how far he had already traveled from the family point of view. Well, if this is all she got by marrying a marquis, the young lady summed up as they paused before the small sober hotel in its high-walled court. And Katie, following her mother through the stone-vaulted and stone-floored vestibule, murmured, "Colin, it must be simply freezing in winter." In the softly faded drawing room, with its old pastels in old frames, its windows looking on the damp green twilight of a garden sunk deep in blackened walls, the American ladies might have been even more conscious of the insufficiency of their friend's compensations, had not the warmth of her welcome precluded all other reflections. It was not till he had gathered them about her in the corner beside the tea table that Durham identified the slender dark lady loitering negligently in the background, and introduced in a comprehensive murmur to the American group, as the redoubtable sister-in-law to whom he had declared himself ready to throw down his challenge. There was nothing very redoubtable about Madame de Trames, except perhaps the kindly, yet critical observation which she bestowed on her sister-in-law's visitors. The unblinking attention of a civilized spectator observing an encampment of aborigines. He had heard of her as a beauty, and was surprised to find her, as Nanny afterward put it, a mere stick to hang clothes on, but they did hang. Comma with a small brown glancing face, like that of a charming little inquisitive animal. Yet before he had addressed 10 words to him nibbling at the hard English consonants like nuts he owned the justice of the epithet. She was a beauty, if beauty, instead of being restricted to the cast of the face, is a pervasive attribute informing the hands, the voice, the gestures, the very fall of a flounce and tilt of a feather. In this impalpable aura of grace, Madame de Trames' dark meager presence unmistakably moved, like a thin flame in a wide quiver of light. And as he realized that she looked much handsomer than she was, so while they talked, he felt that she understood a great deal more than she betrayed. It was not through the groping speech which formed their apparent medium of communication that she imbibed her information. She found it in the air, she extracted it from Durham's look and manner, she caught it in the turn of her sister-in-law's defenseless eyes, for in her presence Madame de Malreuve became Fanny Frisby again. She put it together, in short, out of just such unconsidered indescribable trifles as differentiated the quiet felicity of her dress from Nanny and Katie's and some haphazard clothes. Her actual converse with Durham moved, meanwhile, strictly in the conventional ruts. Had he been long in Paris, which of the new plays did he like best? Was it true that American June's fills were sometimes taken to the Boulevard theaters? And she threw an interrogative glance at the young ladies beside the tea table. To Durham's reply, that it depended how much French they knew, she shrugged and smiled, replying that his compatriots all spoke French like Parisians, inquiring, after a moment's thought, if they learned it, la base, des neigeurs, and laughing heartily when Durham's astonishment revealed her blunder. When at length he had taken leave enveloping the Durham ladies in the last puzzled penetrating look, Madame de Malreuve turned to Mrs. Durham with a faintly embarrassed smile. My sister-in-law was much interested. I believe you are the first Americans as he has ever known. Good gracious, ejaculated Nanny, as though such social darkness required immediate missionary action on someone's part. Well, she knows us, said Durham, catching in Madame de Malherbe's rapid glance, a startled assent to his point. After all, reflected the accurate Katie, as though seeking an excuse for Madame de Tram's unenlightenment, we don't know many French people either. To which Nanny promptly, if obscurely retorted, colon, ah, but we couldn't and she could. IV. Madame de Tram's friendly observation of her sister-in-law's visitors resulted in no expression on her part of a desire to renew her study of them. To all appearances, she passed out of their lives when Madame de Malherbe's door closed on her, and Durham felt that the arduous task of making her acquaintance was still to be begun. He felt also, more than ever, the necessity of attempting it, and in his determination to lose no time, and his perplexity how to set most speedily about the business, he bethought himself of applying to his cousin Mrs. Boykin. Mrs. Elmer Boykin was a small plump woman, to whose vague prettiness the lines of middle age had given no meaning, as though whatever had happened to her had merely added to the sum total of her inexperience. After a Parisian residence of 25 years, spent in a state of feverish servitude to the great artists of the Rue de la Paix, her dress and hair still retained a certain rigidity in keeping with the directness of her gaze, and the unmodulated candor of her voice. Her very drawing room had the hard, bright atmosphere of her native skies, and one felt that she was still true at heart to the national ideals in electric lighting and plumbing. She and her husband had left America owing to the impossibility of living there with the finish and decorum which the Boykin standard demanded. But in the isolation of their exile they had created about them a kind of phantom America, where the national prejudices continued to flourish unchecked by the national progressiveness. A little world sparsely peopled by compatriots, in the same attitude of chronic opposition toward a society chronically unaware of them. In this uncontaminated air Mr. and Mrs. Boykin had preserved the purity of simpler conditions, and Elmer Boykin, returning rakishly from a Sunday's racing at Chantilly, betrayed, under his knowing coat and the racing glasses slung ostentatiously across his shoulder, the unmistakable cut of the American businessman coming P-town after a long day in the office. It was a part of the Boykins' uncomfortable, but determined attitude and perhaps a last expression of their latent patriotism, to live in active disapproval of the world about them, fixing in memory with little stabs of reprobation innumerable instances of what the abominable foreigner was doing, so that they reminded Durham of persons peacefully following the course of a horrible war by pricking red pins in a map. To Mrs. Durham, with her gentle tourist's view of the European continent, as a vast museum in which the human multitude simply furnished the element of costume, the Boykin seemed abysmally instructed, and darkly expert in forbidden things, and her son, without sharing her simple faith in their omniscience, credited them with an ample supply of the kind of information of which he was in search. Mrs. Boykin, from the corner of an intensely modern gobelin sofa, studied her cousin as he balanced himself insecurely on one of the small gilt chairs which always looked surprised at being sat in. Fanny de Malherbe? Oh, of course. I remember you were all very intimate with the Frisbees when they lived in West 33rd Street. But as he has dropped all her American friends since her marriage. The excuse was that de Malherbe didn't like them. But as she's been separated for 5 or 6 years, I can't see. You say she's been very nice to your mother and the girls? Well, I dare say she is beginning to feel the need of friends she can really trust. For as for her French relations, that Malherbe said is the worst in the Faubourg. Of course you know what he is. Even the family, for decency's sake, had to back her up and urge her to get a separation. And Christine de Trams, Durham seized his opportunity. Is she so very reprehensible too? Mrs. Boykin pursed up her small colorless mouth. I can't speak from personal experience. I know Madame de Tram slightly. I have met her at Fanny's, but she never remembers the fact except when she wants me to go to one of her vents de charite. They all remember us then, and some American women are silly enough to ruin themselves at the smart bazaars, and fancy they will get invitations in return. They say Mrs. Addison G. Pack followed Madame Dalglade around for a whole winter, and spent 100,000 francs at her stalls, and at the end of the season Madame Dalglade asked her to tea, and when she got there she found that was for a charity too, and as he had to pay 100 francs to get in. Mrs. Boykin paused with a smile of compassion. Tea, that is not my way, she continued. Personally, I have no desire to thrust myself into French society. I can't see how any American woman can do so without loss of self-respect. But anyone can tell you about Madame de Trames. I wish you would, then, Durham suggested. Well, I think Elmer had better, said his wife mysteriously, as Mr. Boykin, at this point, advanced across the wide expanse of Aubusson on which his wife and Durham were islanded in a state of propinquity without privacy. What's that, Bessie? Ah, Durham, how are you? Didn't see you at Audual this afternoon. You don't race? Busy sightseeing, I suppose? What was that my wife was telling you? Oh, about Madame de Trames. He stroked his pepper and salt mustache with a gesture intended rather to indicate than conceal the smile of experience beneath it. Well, Madame de Trames has not been like a happy country. She's had a history. Several of them. Someone said she constituted the Fililton of the Faubourg Daily News. La suite au prochain numero, you see the point? Not that I speak from personal knowledge. Bessie and I have never cared to force our way. He paused, reflecting that his wife had probably anticipated him in the expression of this familiar sentiment, and added with a significant nod, colon, of course you know the Prince d'Armillac by sight? No? I'm surprised at that. Well, he's one of the choicest ornaments of the jockey club. Very fascinating to the ladies, I believe, but the deuce and all at Baccarat. Ruined his mother and a couple of maiden aunts already, and now Madame de Trames has put the family pearls up the spout, and is wearing imitation for love of him. I had that straight from my maid's cousin, who is employed by Madame d'Armillac's jeweler, said Mrs. Boykin with conscious pride. Oh, it's straight enough more than she is, retorted her husband, who was slightly jealous of having his facts reinforced by any information, not of his own gleaning. Be careful of what you say, Elmer, Mrs. Boykin interposed with archness. I suspect John of being seriously smitten by the lady. Durham let this pass unchallenged, submitting with a good grace to his host's low whistle of amusement, and the sardonic inquiry, colon, ever do anything with the foils? D'Armillac is what they call over here a fine lame. Oh, I don't mean to resort to bloodshed, unless it's absolutely necessary. But I mean to make the lady's acquaintance, said Durham, falling into his key. Mrs. Boykin's lips tightened to the vanishing point. I am afraid you must apply for an introduction to more fashionable people than we are. Elmer and I so thoroughly disapprove of French society that we have always declined to take any part in it. But why should not Fanny de Malreve arrange a meeting for you? Durham hesitated. I don't think she is on very intimate terms with her husband's family. You mean that she's not allowed to introduce her friends to them, Mrs. Boykin interjected sarcastically, while her husband added, with an air of portentous initiation, colon, ah, my dear fellow, the way they treat the Americans over here, that's another chapter, you know. How some people can stand it, Mrs. Boykin chimed in, and as the footman, entering at that moment, tendered her a large coroneted envelope, she held it up, as if in illustration of the indignities to which her countrymen were subjected. Look at that, my dear John, she exclaimed, another card to one of their everlasting bazaars. Why, it's at Madame d'Armillac's, the prince's mother. Madame de Trames must have sent it, of course. The brazen way in which they combine religion and immorality. 50 francs admission, Rien que cela. to see some of the most disreputable people in Europe. And if you're an American, you're expected to leave at least 1,000 behind you. Their own people naturally get off cheaper. She tossed over the card to her cousin. There's your opportunity to see Madame de Trames. Make it 2,000, and she'll ask you to tea, Mr. Boykin scathingly added. In the monumental drawing room of the Hotel de Malherbe, it had been a surprise to the American to read the name of the house emblazoned on black marble over its still more monumental gateway. Durham found himself surrounded by a buzz of feminine tea sipping oddly out of keeping with the wigged and cuirassed portraits frowning high on the walls, the majestic attitude of the furniture, the rigidity of great gilt consoles drawn up like lords in waiting against the tarnished panels. It was the old Marquise de Malherbe's, and Madame de Trames, who lived with her mother, had admitted Durham to the heart of the enemy's country by inviting him, after his prodigal disbursements at the charity bazaar, to come in to tea on a Thursday. Whether, in thus fulfilling Mr. Boykin's prediction, as he had been aware of Durham's purpose, and had her own reasons for falling in with it, or whether she simply wished to reward his lavishness at the fair, and permit herself another glimpse of an American so picturesquely embodying the type familiar to French fiction on these points. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.